Arando is one of those big four musical forms of the classical era I evoked earlier. We've already talked about sonata form at some length, at least as much as we have time to talk about. Rondo is a frankly simpler form. The concept of a rondo is based on one premise, and that premise is periodic thematic return. We state a theme, and then periodically, we come back to that theme. In between playings of the theme, we will have various contrasting material, which will create a sense of departure, and then, of course, on our arrival back at the rondo theme, a marvelous sense of completion, having traversed some musical distance before coming back home. This rondo works this way. We have four statements total of the rondo theme. The rondo theme has a number of internal phrases, which we'll hear in a moment. Then we have a section B, characterized ultimately with its own theme. A returns. Then a section C, characterized by its own theme. And then another new theme, D, a return to the rondo theme again. These periodic returns are, if not as regular as clockwork, then at least anticipatable. Theme B then comes back again. A comes back, and then the piece is concluded. We would expect, as an audience in 1786, 1787, we would expect a rondo in a last movement. Rondos are typically light, they're typically effervescent, they typically leave us with a smile on our face and a twinkle in our toes. I mention all of this because this rondo is bubbly, but it's not ecstatic. It's not the kind of carried away rondo theme we might ordinarily expect. Let's just listen to the first three phrases of this theme, A, B, and A prime, just to get it in our ear before we discuss it at any length at all. Rondo theme, movement three. Phrase B. A prime. Yeah, this theme is not going to make us write home. It's not going to make us jump up and start dancing around, despite the fact that it's light, elegant, and back to a certain level of tempo that brings our heartbeat back up from about 20, which is where the second movement purposely left us. Yeah, there's a couple of things that make this theme odd, and I would point them out right away. It sounds to my ears, and it would sound to all of our ears, as if this theme is starting on a downbeat. Bum ba bum ba bum ba bum 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 ba ya ba 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 bum. But it's not. And if we try to count it that way, a very odd and troubling thing is going to happen. One, two, one, two, three, one, two, one, two. It doesn't count evenly in twos. It's a two and a three. Mozart is trying to fool us from the beginning of the piece by using the kind of rhythmic device that becomes Beethoven's reason to be. But Mozart anticipates by using a rhythmic device to create tension. No, we shouldn't start counting this piece until one, two, one, two, one, two, one. Now, you might be thinking again, so by creating a cross rhythm, by creating an uneven series of beats, a group of two plus a group of three plus a group of two, Mozart is taking our body out of the musical equation. It's hard to dance. It's hard to know where the main beat is. It's hard to feel comfortable with this music. Look, you could be out on a marvelous date, or you could be meeting someone for the first time, or at some kind of dinner party, and someone could be erudite and articulate and beautiful. But if their saliva is not clear, you will be struck by all kinds of strange feelings, and you'll probably move backwards quickly. I have found unclear saliva to be a sure sign of antisocial behavior, ultimately sometime down the line. So, I want you to hear this strange rhythmic manipulation as something that is not right. Instead of yumpa bum ba bum bum bum, what Mozart actually wrote was yumpa bum ba bum ba bum bum, but that's not how it sounds, and so there is a rhythmic ambiguity from the very beginning. Let's listen to this again and see if we can notice that rhythmic ambiguity that ultimately creates a 2 plus a 3 plus a 2. Theme again. B.